Marilyn Heck. Marilyn Heck and Fred.
I'm from Canada, water. Dick Poop.
The award for the best picture is never lightly given. And now, to divulge the contents of this year's most important envelope is a very important contributor to world entertainment, and someone, quite likely,
Hello, and welcome to the This Had Oscar Buzz podcast, the only podcast that is dancing up a storm underneath the little moon with the Coke spoon at Studio 54. welcome to the podcast where we normally talk about movies that once upon a time had Academy Award aspirations, but for some reason or another, it all went wrong and the Oscar hopes died, and we tend to perform autopsies. But today, we are kicking off a month's worth of autopsies. What kinds of autopsies? 1970s autopsies.
50 years worth of autopsy technology.
Old ass bodies. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're going to limit ourselves to the technology that was available for autopsies in the 1970s, which, as far as I understand,
nothing laparoscopic.
Is just like
laparoscopic.
Yeah, it's just spoons. We're just like digging into bodies with like
Coke spoons, in fact.
Yes, in fact. This is not a traditional This Had Oscar Buzz episode, and we believe you will forgive us for shortchanging you, because we are about to deliver 10 whole episodes of 1970s goodness in the span of a month, so we're pacing ourselves.
This is
ourselves.
The chips and salsa. This is the veggie tray that we lay
the crudité.
Before the large.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Yes. Welcome to the crudité. Yeah. Yes.
If we sound a little tired, listener, we are, because we're in the month of May. What could we do to follow up 100 years, 100 snubs?
Well, this is the thing, and we'll talk about
give
it. Yeah,
a full smorgasbord. And here, today, on this day, we're going to set the table for what is about to come in the month ahead.
Okay, so to sort of zoom out, to really set the table, we've done mini-series for our podcast in the month of May since we began. Our very first one was on the films of 2003, a sort of a year where, famously, the biggest Oscar buzz titles went awry in some way or another. We ended up spending 4 or 5 weeks talking about Cold Mountain in the context of other
Every
things.
Every episode was basically a Cold Mountain.
Every episode turned into a Cold Mountain episode, and we were very, very happy with it. Then the following year was the pandemic. The first pandemic already was upon us. So the first pandemic year. And we did the films of our beloved Naomi Watts, our misbegotten beloved Naomi Watts. Year three, we did the films of Focus Features, our one of our favored indie studios, our indie shingle dependent studios. And what were our focuses? I'm trying to remember.
Well,
we started with October Films, right? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right. As chosen by our listeners,
yes.
The Muse.
The Muse, we did Possession. No.
Yes.
What was it called?
We did Possession.
Is that what it's called? The
Possession
Aaron Eckhart?
Was the first Focus Feature.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Yes.
Officially.
Station Agent, was that one of our... No.
No, hold please.
Thank you. Yeah, I suppose I could just like scroll up in the thing that's right in front of my goddamn face.
I am secretarial this episode. the other Focus Features, Possession, Lust, Caution, The Place Beyond the Pines, and Boy Erased.
And Boy Erased, exactly. Thank you, Chris. The following year...
That's a good one.
We sort of, the 2022 miniseries, we began to play with format a little bit, where we grafted onto our May miniseries the Entertainment Weekly seasonal movie previews. So in addition to talking about whatever movie was on the cover of that issue, we talked about that issue of EW itself. So those were very long episodes.
A whole year, we did spring summer fall holiday.
Yes.
And then a listener's choice.
And then a listener's choice. Yes. That's the other thing, is we kept finding the month of May having five Mondays in it. So we were supersized for all these years. We did Panic Room. We did The Da Vinci Code. We did Ransom. We did The Pelican Brief. We did Notting Hill. We had a very good time with that one. So to top that, last year, we decided to absolutely destroy our lives. No, this was maybe one of the most fun things I've ever been a part of, which was 100 Years and 100 Snubs, a five-part extravaganza, I'm just going to say it, of snubbed performances and accomplishments and films. And we had a hell of a time doing that. And the response to that one was really, really positive. We were very, very happy that you all seemed to like it so much. And so that was great.
Especially because we were so nervous, being that we were going to just completely disband the
format. Right, exactly, exactly. So we were very, very happy with how that turned out. And that happiness lasted several months until it sort of started to dawn on us that, like, oh, we're going to have to, like, do another May miniseries.
We're going to have to top this somehow.
And, like, we had long discussions, and, you know, pragmatist that I sometimes am, I'm like, maybe we just, like, don't top it. Maybe we, like, downshift, like, consciously downshift to, like, lower expectations. And I think, to your credit, I think you were like, we should push. And I think that was probably the right idea. But we had a lot of ideas we were sort of throwing around. And there was a lot of, like, yeah, we could do that. That'd be a really good one. We had a lot of ideas that would have been really solid miniseries. And we were sort of had this workmanlike dedication to it. And then when the idea of the 70s was broached, and we really sort of, like, dug into it, and we kind of asked a couple of our friends to weigh in, and at some point, I think it clicked for the both of us, and we both were like, oh, this is going to be fun. This is going to be huge and insane, but really fun. But so talk a little bit about why the films of the 1970s is such a thing for this podcast that we do.
Well, there's a couple like heads to that dragon.
Yeah.
And the first of which is, you know, we always regularly have listeners asking us to do older and older movies. The oldest movie we've ever done, back when Emily St. James came on to talk about Ford's Moby Dick, is back in the 50s. We're not going that far back, but, you know.
And that's a huge outlier, because, like, the gap between the oldest movie we had done and the second oldest is 31 years.
Yes.
So, yeah.
And like, this particular head of the dragon also has multiple heads, because the reason we don't go as far back is, like, the simplest thing is so many of these movies that are remembered or would have been in the position for it got Oscar nominations somewhere. So
you'd be surprised how hard it is to find a movie that has been sort of lost to history that then anybody listening to this podcast would remember it all. Do you know what I mean? Where at least when we do our episodes under our own rubric, we're doing episodes from the last 30 to 40 years. And we remember these ones, even though they did not get recognized by the Oscars. The farther back you go, if a movie totally went under the radar and is not part of some, like, celebrated auteurs, you know, filmography, these movies really do sort of, like, fall into the cracks of movie history, and unearthing them becomes sort of a little bit of a different thing than what we do. Then it becomes historical or excavational, and that's not quite what we do. So,
well, and this is where I've been somewhat of the maybe over pragmatic mind on the show, is when you're dealing with a smaller pool of movies that are available for our format that, like, fit our rubric, I've been the one that says we got to be careful about burning those off too soon.
Yes.
You know, because we would like to have them more spread out if we ever want to dip the toes into that.
This is how we've held on. The same mindset is how we've not done an episode on The Producers in 5 years, because we're like, we can't deplete our musicals. We gotta hold on to some musicals.
We will do more musicals coming at us that we could do. We could do The Prom, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
God, what a threat. Yes, what a horrible threat you just made right here in front of everybody. I'll have you arrested, sir.
James Corden will pull down a hit on us for the things that we will say.
What did you say about James Corden when that movie came out? You were like, James Corden should be brought up on war crimes or something like that.
Exactly. Yeah. Maybe that's why he's awaiting litigation. That's why we don't hear from him anymore. Hail Satan. So that's the first thing, you know, of this was an idea that we felt listeners would want because it's a deep dive into older movies than we normally cover. I think the other idea is the kind of widespread belief that the 1970s are a golden era for the Oscars and for cinema at large as well. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a period of time that I think conventional wisdom is the Oscars were never picking as good of choices as then. And
it's a reputation that I will say kind of holds up. You know what I mean?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Because I feel like when you're really looking granular, as we have, because by the way, listeners, this entire miniseries, we're recording out of order. We'll explain why.
Kind of for the first time, we never record out of order. I know some podcasts do and manage to, like, you know, make that feel very seamless.
It's been like an episode out of order. These are all kind of loosey-goosey. It's like loosey-goosey front half, loosey-goosey back half.
And you'll see why we had to sort of do that when we explain the movies.
Right. What path was I on getting to that? Shit, what was I saying?
You were saying movies of the 1970s.
Oh, the idea that the 70s are the best. Yes.
Yes.
So this idea that the Oscars are the best, I think as we have been having these conversations, this era of the 70s, I think when you look at it more granularly, you do realize that there are a lot of, for lack of a better term, finger quotes, Oscar behaviors or Oscar like defaults or whatever that are very present in the 70s as well. Like the type of wins, the type of Oscar logic that everybody maybe complains about in certain type of movies, like the Belfasts, etc.
Right.
The Reader, you know, they were still very present in the 70s. And I think the other thing about doing this mini series too is getting to do the research, and it's very difficult to a lot of the resources that, you know, we maybe rely on, things like the Wayback Machine or just our general nerd experience in not letting anything in our time as Oscar watchers go. Basically, you know, the research of this has been more focused. I mean, I don't think I could have gotten through this miniseries without Inside Oscar, the truly textbook throwback.
Open the schools, make everybody read Inside Oscar. That's
yeah. Let me pull up my copy to show Joe on mic. It is I had to, because I don't believe it's still in print. It might be print for, like,
if you can find it somewhere, get you a copy. I definitely have mine.
You're gonna end up buying used versions of Inside Oscar, listener.
Worth
if
it.
You do buy it, because mine, you can see, has old library
Oh, I love it.
Because, like, this is what you gotta do to get a print copy.
The first time
this book
I ever read Inside Oscar, it was in my college library. It was in it was part of the collection there. And boy, did I just tumble down some rabbit holes. It was great.
Inside Oscar goes basically up to the 90s, written by Mason Wiley and Damian Bona. There is an Inside Oscar 2 that follows the 90s to 2002.
Yeah, it's only a matter of like 6 or 7 years or whatever, but
Yeah. But it is textbook size. And when you read the chapters for each year, too, it's really a great source in terms of reporting at the time.
Yes.
But it's not like Oscar is now, where, you know, that's people's job just to report on award right. season and such. So it is a very, very different beast.
They were relying on your real old school gossip columnists, your Liz Smiths, your mm-hmm. Cindy Adamses, you know what I mean? Like, that's where a lot of these, like, Liz Smith gets quoted in that thing a billion times, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
yeah,
it's
yeah,
just
yeah.
like, or your Army Archers, you know what I mean? Out west or whatever. And yeah. Yeah, it's tremendous. But
and the idea of, like, Oscar campaigns, which I know some of the, like, some of our listeners who are not as enmeshed in mm-hmm. award season and such don't necessarily know what a campaign is mm-hmm. Or what that looks like, you know, in terms of press, luncheons, et cetera, et cetera.
Pressing the flesh, as they say. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right. You know, putting your Oscar hopefuls out on the town to,
yeah.
you know, shake hands, kiss babies of voters, et cetera, et cetera. But also advertising, marketing, yeah. yada, yada, yada. When you're talking about this era of movie, it's a very different mm-hmm. thing, because as some of the movies that we'll eventually talk about, you know, when the quotes are pulled from the trades or whatever, or gossip columns in Inside Oscar, aggressive campaigns are like campaigns considered, the ones that were considered aggressive at the time mm-hmm. or gauche, were like movies that ran 20 ads in Variety over the course of a season, which is
yeah.
insane.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Like, movies today would have 20 ads in Variety.
If we saw a movie that only got 20 ads, issue, we would be like, what is IFC doing with this movie? Like, that's... that...
We would be like, Oscilloscope was not the
right
distributor
right.
for this movie.
Right.
They're only running 20 ads.
But so it also, like, then becomes this thing where we're sort of looking backwards to this moment where having Oscar buzz kind of meant that you got Oscar nominations. You know what I mean? Just like, it just mm-hmm. sort of. So we tend to, these 10 movies that we have picked, for the most part, are movies where we're going on things like prestige reputations for the talent involved, whether it's the director or the star or the source material sometimes, which are things that we go on now when we're choosing movies from the present day. But mm-hmm. that's also, you know, why those movies then have this observable Oscar buzz that we have. So we... Mm-hmm. We had a fun time, I think, choosing this 10. But before we let go of research, one of the most fun things about researching for this miniseries for me is I've just been watching a bunch of movies. I've just been watching a bunch mm-hmm. of movies from the 70s that I've never seen before that were Oscar nominees, just to sort of, like, put myself into, you know, the milieu of that time. And it's been... great. It's been really, really fun to all these things that were, like, forever sort of like holes in my film watching, I am now patching up. And it's, I mean, again, this decade has its reputation for a reason. And we'll talk about, you know, in the episodes we've already sort of started to record, there's a lot of talk about, you know, the changing face of Hollywood through the mm-hmm. decade of the 70s. It really does sort of, like, walk out like a lamb, or walk in like a lamb and out like a lion, kind of a thing.
That's another thing I would say about, like, doing this granular research on this decade that I think we who like movies all think we know. But the one thing that's come into really, like, come to the forefront for me, especially for our earlier episodes, it's a transitional time for the industry, but it's also a transitional time for Oscar mm-hmm. in a way that feels
yes.
like there are some parallels to today. Not quite to the extreme that they were in the 70s, because, you know, when we launch into our 1970s episode coming this May 1st, later this week.
Yeah.
You know, that's the year that Patton wins. And it's coming off of the late 60s, where you have Midnight Cowboy winning mm-hmm. a Best Picture Oscar, which is kind of revolutionary, not just because it's an X rating, but because of the content of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you're talking about a decade of movies where they're giving My Fair Lady Best Picture Oscars. You know, it's the big splashy musical mm-hmm. decade. But you also have things like anti-establishment movies coming through. Easy Rider, obviously, being the big example.
Yes.
Doesn't get a Best Picture nomination, but it does land two Oscar nominations, which is somewhat of a feat when you consider... Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, American culture is going through a huge transition in the late 60s, but certainly cinema. And in the early 70s, you see this kind of old guard trying to hang on to certain things, but you also see this movement within the industry of certainly a generation of actors who didn't grow up watching the Oscars on TV,
yes.
So they... For that reason, and among other reasons, don't take the Oscars seriously, and they kind of resent the Oscars. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the big example being George C. Scott.
Yes. Refusing
even though
Oscar.
The longer yeah. narrative over this decade is also Dustin Hoffman, who rejects the Oscars and then ends the decade winning an Oscar and, you know, showing up to it when he hadn't shown up before.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting decade in a lot of ways.
When Mark Harris wrote his book Pictures at a Revolution, talking about sort of the giving way of the classic old Hollywood to the new Hollywood, he centered it around the 1967 Best Picture lineup, which is a smart mm-hmm. thing to do because it sort of allows you to sort of see the ways in which those different versions of Hollywood are butting up against each other very much like in competition. And you'll end up seeing that a lot throughout. We'll talk about a lot, not only the movies that we've selected, but also the Oscars from that particular year. And you'll see a lot of that, of these lineups, which are an amalgam of a little bit of the old style, a lot of the new style. And you'll see as the years go by that new style, the new Hollywood, kind of becomes more and more prevalent. You'll also see it when we talk about stories from the Oscar ceremonies, which a lot of these are available to watch on YouTube. And you'll see just these actual conflicts between the old guard, your Bob Hopes and Frank Sinatras and John Waynes and whatnot, and the ways in which these sort of like the newer generations, some of whom sort of bristled against the idea of the competition aspects of the Oscars being very embarrassing or antithetical to art. You'll get not only Dustin Hoffman and George C. Scott, but, you know, Glenda Jackson will throw a quote in there, or Joanne Woodward will throw a quote in there, and talking about, you know, the flesh parade and the, you know, not wanting to be so desperate to win a trinket, you know what I mean? And so it's an interesting decade to go across for our purposes. And it really, really did energize us in a way where, like, I almost feel like I've signed up for like a 4-week course, a 5-week course at a college, where I'm just like, oh, I'm just going to like just learn so much doing this miniseries.
So, Joe, let's get into the full format of what we're doing. If listeners are not already fully aware, we're doing the entire decade.
We're doing the entire decade of the 1970s. One film per year, that makes 10 episodes. Normally, in a given month with 5 Mondays, we'd only get 5 episodes, but we are giving you 10. Now, 10 with an asterisk, which is you'll get all 10 if you are a Patreon member signed up for This Had Oscar Buzz, Turbulent Brilliance. We are doing 8 main feed episodes and then 2 on the Patreon to round us out with a full 10. There's some really good ones. We're not trying to pull a fast one here. We're crowding the main schedule as it is. So we're using the Patreon.
We were giving ourselves a break
as an outlet
by being like,
too.
Let's spread it over into the Patreon. But
yes.
I think also spreading it over into the Patreon allows us to even further kind of break the mold in what we normally do.
Yes.
In a really fun way.
We'll get to those when we're going to go through chronologically and we're going to tell you what movies we're talking about. And also, we also committed ourselves to doing guests for every single main feed episode for the month of May. So we're also very excited. That's also part of the reason why the scheduling has been a bit off. You try trying to schedule 8 people for an episode within the span of a month while also holding down your own full-time jobs and family commitments and whatnot. It's been, yeah. And like planned vacations and stuff like that. So yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot going on. All right.
It's been a lot. If in June we sound absolutely run ragged, trust and believe, we do this all for you.
And we'd have it no other way. Okay, so Chris, do you want to start off, or should I start off with the film of 1970?
Kick us off with 1970. What is the film? Why is the film? And who's joining us to talk about it?
Yeah, so like I said, in a lot of these, we chose based off of the prestige and reputation of the talent involved. We also kind of scoured ancillary lists, whether it be the Cannes Film Festival, the Golden Globes, the critics circles and whatnot. And I managed to find in 1970 a Golden Globe nomination for one Miss Angela Lansbury for a film I had never heard of, which was the directorial debut of no less a theater luminary than Harold Prince. It's called Something for Everyone. The vibe is very Saltburn in Bavaria, which I'm into. It was somewhat difficult to track down. It is not super available, although hit up your local eBay and see, and maybe you can catch a copy.
Isn't it also on YouTube?
No, the clips, there are clips on YouTube, and the clips on YouTube are of very poor quality. Like, it's tough to make out what faces are happening there. But anyway, Angela Lansbury, Michael York, bisexuality in the French and Austrian Alps. It's a time. And so to talk about this movie, we're bringing in first-time guest, my wonderful friend Chris Schleicher, who you may know from, was a writer on The Mindy Project. He's also on camera on The Mindy Project, I believe, Nurse Chris. Never Have I Ever, and Saved by the Bell, the remake, and my beloved Champions that was so short-lived on NBC. All of the shows Chris has worked on, I love. Really, that's one we've got in the can. That was a very, very fun conversation. I'm very, very excited for people to listen to that one.
When we settled on that movie, I was like, I don't know how this first episode's going to go, but it's a pretty good one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Chris, for 1971, we decided to go the Chris File special, and one that's very close to your heart.
Very close to my heart. You can wait for the episode to find out about that. It will also be an interesting conversation because this is a director who would be a major factor kind of half in, half out throughout the decade. I'm talking about the one and only Hal Ashby. We will be talking about 1971's Harold and Maude.
Yes.
A movie I adore. Joe, I can't wait to talk to you about it, and I can't wait to talk to our guest about it. Film critic Katie Walsh is joining us for the first time.
Yes. Very excited to welcome Katie. I have of course read her stuff, but also she's been recently also indoctrinated into the Screen Drafts family, and I've very much enjoyed Katie on that, so that'll be really
I feel
a lot
like
of fun.
We're a cult. We're all wearing the same Nikes, drinking the same Kool-Aid,
right.
All of us in the pool of Screen Drafts,
right? Yes, exactly. One of the first movies we kind of locked down for this series, I believe maybe the first one, was just like, well, because we had already
planning to do this one.
We were already in talks with the wonderful Jordan Hoffman, who will also be a first time guest on this episode, to do a Barbara movie. And one of the ones that we had discussed was Up the Sandbox, 1972's Up the Sandbox. So we were like, why don't we just slot that into our 70s series and we'll have Jordan on. And we have not done this episode yet. And I am so excited to talk to every once in a while, ever since we did our episode on Nuts, Barbara's movie from 1987. I'll get the stray DM or text from Jordan about Barbara's performance in Nuts. So the desperation I had to include Jordan in this episode talking about Barbara. He was also on Blank Check for their Barbara Streisand, God, it's gonna kill me. Episode, or their miniseries rather, and so I'm dedicated to turning Jordan into one of this country's foremost authorities on Barbara. And so that, like, whenever there's, like, a documentary made about her, that Jordan will be a talking head that they
absolutely ask. Essential that that happens.
Yes, yes, yes. All right. What's our 73 episode? We've already recorded this one, too. 1973.
You brought up Blank Check. David Sims is coming back to this had Oscar buzz. We are going to be talking about Nicholas Roeg's Don't Look
Classic.
Now.
Classic horror cinema. Yeah.
December release, also in the year of a major horror movie opening in December and doing well at the Oscars.
This thing crashed the BAFTAs. This had so many BAFTA nominations, and the Oscars
a lot of BAFTA
were like, nope, sorry, we heard you had sex for real. We will not be including
yes,
you at
we'll
all.
We'll be talking about that sex scene.
Yes.
We'll be talking about the movie, obviously, that Oscar year.
Donald Sutherland, Julie Christie, lots to talk about in that film.
Donald Sutherland, the never nominated, but given an honorary Oscar, Donald Sutherland.
Exactly. For 1974, I feel like we had a lot to choose from what I recall, that there was several movies that we could have gone with. One that intrigued me was, oh, we could talk about a Billy Wilder movie who's, you know, I don't really associate Billy Wilder with the 70s as much. His sort of heyday was before that. But to be able to do a Billy Wilder, Jack Lemmon, Walter Matthau movie for 1974, mm-hmm. we are talking about The Front Page, the adaptation of the stage play that was also adapted many decades before into His Girl Friday. We are welcoming back our beloved Roxana Haddadi to talk about The Front Page with us, and also the Oscar year that was 1974, which was just packed with intrigue, just a lot going on at the 74 Oscars. And we talked about a lot of it, and it was a real good time. So very excited to hear you talk about that. Now, Chris, 1975 is when we will make our first Patreon. This wouldn't be an excursion. We're setting aside the exception excursion.
We're doing an exception. Listen, we can't break our brains too much. We're not breaking the Patreon format necessarily.
Right.
But for the full scope, the full experience of the This Had Oscar Buzz 70s spectacular, you're gonna have to sign up for the Patreon. We understand. We support you if you do not wish. But I think all of our listeners want to hear us talk about The Who's Tommy.
Yes.
And Ken Russell and Margaret and Margaret's incredible nomination for this movie.
Tina Turner, Elton John, Platform Boots, Roger Daltrey,
Pinball,
all of it.
Oliver Reed.
Right. Yes.
Is this our only time to talk about it? Well, we don't have Oliver Reed or Alan Bates. We kind of talk about them in one of the episodes.
In one of the episodes, we get into talking about women in love, so we definitely talk about Oliver Reed. Yeah, a little bit.
Oh, right.
Yes.
But we're doing an exception episode on Tommy for 1975.
The Whom's Tommy.
The Whom's?
The Whom's?
Tomothy.
Thomas. worth signing up for the Patreon just for that episode. All right, 1976 is a one close to my heart, and now that I know that Chris is on board in the cult of this movie,
this is going to be the wildest.
We are dedicated to spreading the gospel of 1976's The Ritz, Terrence McNally's play turned film starring Rita Moreno
vehicle.
Oh my god. F. Murray Abraham in a teeny tiny towel, Rita Moreno pushing the boundaries of good taste, but all for our benefit. And we are welcoming another multi-time guest, one of our faves, Christina Tucker, will be on to talk about The Ritz. It's a movie I hounded Chris to see for the better part of a year, and he did, and now we can all just like...
And I lost.
As I knew you would. It's such a fun movie, and this was a Golden Globe nominee. This had Tony Award prestige to it, so we're not stretching it too much. If you don't know what The Ritz is about, The Ritz is a sex farce set in a gay bathhouse in New York City in the 70s. If that is not enough to make you sprint to go find wherever this is streaming, I believe it's on VOD,
I gotta tell you, when I went to go just like do my rental for this movie so that we could record the episode, I was like, I'm just gonna buy it. I'm not gonna do the $3.99 rental. I'm gonna do the $9.99.
You're gonna do the $9.99. You're gonna buy it. It's a good purchase. You'll get a lot out of it. All right, Chris. The year 1977. The filmmaker.
Listeners are also gonna be very excited.
The filmmaker is one you may have heard of. The guest is one you may have listened to on this podcast before.
Listen, sometimes Thanksgiving comes twice.
Yes.
Katie Rich is coming, and guess what we're talking about? We're talking about none other than Mr. Scorsese's Nueva York.
If you did not get enough of us on Screen Dress talking about Martin Scorsese, we decided that we were so bummed that New York had already been drafted by the time it was our turn to opine on the films of Martin Scorsese that... We were like, well, we can't. We all watched it in preparation. We all had a ton of opinions that were just sort of roiling inside us. So, yeah, we're going to talk about New York. We're going to talk about Liza. We're going to talk about Robert De Niro as the worst boyfriend, perhaps, in cinema history. It's all happening. 1970s Marty. As Chris said, Thanksgiving does come twice a year. We're very, very happy to have Thanksgiving in May with Katie Ritt for 1978.
Then Joe, for 1978, also on the Patreon.
Yes.
We're giving a first attempt to something we haven't done before as the excursion on the Patreon.
Doing a live commentary. Not a live, I guess, a commentary.
Yeah,
it's live for us. It'll air.
It's live for us recording it. It can be live for
live
you
to tape.
Listening
live
to it,
tape.
Watching the movie.
We're going to do a commentary on the seminal 1970s fashion thriller.
I fully strong-armed us into
deep normal movie, Eyes of Laura
Extreme
Mars.
Extreme normal. You've never seen more
You've
normal.
You've never seen a more normal movie than Eyes of Laura Mars, featuring none other than the aforementioned Barbra Streisand on love theme duty. She's not in the movie, but she's singing the love theme over the end credits. Does a movie about a serial killer whose killings are viewed through the main character's eyes when she gets a vision of the killings? Does that kind of movie deserve a love theme? Who's to say? We'll talk about it. I'm very excited.
Do you want to watch an even more gay That's So Raven?
Oh, my God. Do you want to see suspicion fall on Rene Auberjonois just because he's her gay friend? Do you want to see that? Tremendous. Very excited to talk about Eyes of Laura Mars.
Do you want to see less homophobic Brian De Palma movies?
Honestly, true. All right. To close out our 1970 spectacular from 1979, Chris, talk about it.
We will be talking about. Listen,
I couldn't be more excited.
Do a mini series.
I couldn't be more
without
excited.
A musical.
Yeah,
though I guess we have two musicals in this mini series if you count New York.
And I do.
We are doing for 1979 the Behind the Curve adaptation by Milos Forman of the musical Hair.
We're back in the Milos business. Is not a bad movie. It's a good movie. And we are taking a one-way trip to the Age of Aquarius with Hair.
And we have none other than Natalie Walker joining
First
us.
First time guest, Natalie Walker. So excited. So excited.
We locked this episode down, and Natalie immediately sends me a picture of her at the stage door with Will Swenson from the Broadway revival. Trust and believe we will be
this
talking
is what
about
we're bringing
that revival.
You. This is what we are bringing you. Yes. Oh my God. Tremendous.
Joe, I think it's going to be a wild miniseries. I hope listeners are excited about this. I hope everybody has fun.
We should say these will be coming at you at an irregular schedule in order to spread these out over the month of May. We are we are spreading them out as we see fit. So, as follows.
Check our Instagram and Twitter, you will be able to find the calendar there of when the episodes are coming.
But in general, I'll just lay them out to you. Publish dates for these films on the main feed. Something for Everyone will drop on May 1st. Harold and Maude on May 6th. Up the Sandbox on May 9th. Don't Look Now, May 13th. The Front Page, May 16th. The Ritz, May 20th. New York, New York, May 23rd. And then Hair on May 27th. Chris, remind me of the Patreon dates.
Those are coming on the Saturdays after their respective episodes. So that will be May 18th and May 25th.
You're going to have to wait. Patreon subscribers, you're going to have to wait a little bit longer than...
We got a fun little bonus coming for you, so you don't have to wait.
Exactly. Those episodes will be
coming.
Go
check out the Patreon to find out what that is.
Indeed. But, you guys, I'm so excited. I know Chris is so excited. I know our guests are really excited.
I think we planned these movies well, too, because even if, you know, we're maybe not talking about Robert De Niro when people would normally be talking about Robert De Niro,
but that's our thing too.
Or we're not talking about Hal Ashby when it would normally be talked about. You know, we're getting a lot of people that you talk about when you talk about this era into the conversation.
We enjoy talking about, you know, the movies from people who, you know, that aren't always the ones that you think about right away. So I think we're doing a really interesting Streisand. I think we're doing a really interesting Scorsese. I think we're doing, like you said, Milos Forman and Billy Wilder and, you know, Hal Ashby. Yeah. And it's going to be a time. It's already a time. Already the ones that we've recorded.
We can already promise you a time.
I'm watching so many 70s movies. I got 70s movies coming out my ears. It's, and ones that like normally I would like, I don't know if I would have, you know, sat down and watched. I don't know, The French Connection.
Women in Love?
At this point. Well, no, Women in Love was at the top of my... I don't think I would have watched A Touch of Class. And now I...
Listeners, you don't have to watch A Touch of Class. A Touch of Class.
Let us talk about A Touch of Class.
A Touch of Ass. That movie
no,
sucks.
A Touch of Ass makes it sound fun. A Touch of Class.
Yeah, that makes it sound way more fun than the movie is.
That's...
I hope listeners do as you do, because I know that we have listeners who want to watch all of the movies before they listen to the episodes, but I hope listeners also, you know, expand your horizons into some things on your 70s watch list that you just never got around to.
My watch list is just the longest possible, and just the most accusatory thing in my life is the list of movies that I keep meaning to watch and have not watched. And so many of those movies are these classic 70s things. And finally, I've been able to, you know, watch them. And so many of them are so good. I finally saw Five Easy Pieces. I'm going to be talking about that movie forever. It's so good.
All the actresses in that movie.
I'm saying. So,
Joe, before we forget,
yes,
one thing that we have tasked all of our guests with this month, we are asking them the question, because the 70s are so heralded as a great Oscar decade.
We're
asking them what their favorite Oscar win of the decade is.
Yes.
And I think this is the opportunity for us to give out ours.
All right, I'm going to do mine first, because then I'm going to guess yours, because I'm pretty sure I know what yours is.
I think you know it.
And so would have been near the top of my own list as well. So I'm going to pick something else. And the other thing that I'm going to pick is maybe not as exciting, but The Deer Hunter, Best Picture, 1978, is
interesting.
A movie that might keep some people away because it is 18 billion hours long and about a bunch of friends going to Vietnam and having their lives, you know, changed for the worse because of it. But I will tell you, Michael Cimino's The Deer Hunter delivers. I saw this movie for the first time only a few years ago, and it's so impressive. It's so...
I remember the night you watched that movie and I got, you know, Russian novel text.
8 billion texts about how good it is. It's so fucking good. De Niro's so good. Walken, who wins the supporting actor Oscar. Meryl's in this movie. This is very early Meryl, but it's also just like, it's amazing how captivated I was by this movie that just sort of like keeps, you know, it keeps on going. It's somewhat episodic, but it's the mood of sort of sad resignation for just sort of the path that these friends are all going to have to trot. It's a tremendous companion piece, I will say, to Five Bloods. Like, I would put both of those movies together in a rep screening at some point. But anyway, picture and director and supporting actor, and it won a bunch of Oscars that year, and well-deserved. Chris, talk to us about Liza Minnelli and Cabaret.
Oh, do you think that's my choice?
Yes, is that not?
It's not my choice. It's not my choice. If I was going to choose the best actress win for the decade, it would be either Glenda Jackson in Women in Love or Ellen Burstyn in Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, probably.
Oh, so not even
Clute? Or Jane Fonda in Clute. I mean,
For sure you were going to do Liza in Cabaret.
No. I mean, is this where people yell at me because I don't... I have some reservations about that Cabaret adaptation, while still thinking that it is, yes, a masterpiece.
I must be thinking about somebody else who's...
The second love story that is not in the stage show, it's just not...
No, I know.
Anything worthwhile. But, like, Liza is incredible. No, mine is... if I tell you this, maybe this will get you to guess it correctly. I'm glad I didn't guess yours, because I never would have actually guessed your pick. It's Below the Line.
Oh, okay. Oh, God. Well...
It's Below the Line, and I've included it in our mini-series art for the show.
Oh my god. Wait, okay. Is it a song?
It's a best original song.
Is it the theme from Shaft?
No, but that's also pretty fucking rad. No, it's Donna Summer's Last
Dance. Oh, Last Dance. Duh. So we both picked from the same year. That's so funny.
Yeah. We would have both been very happy this Oscar year, I guess.
Yes, very true.
Actually, no, because my favorite Best Actress nominee is from this year.
Oh, wait, let me guess. So the nominees, Jane Fonda for Coming Home, Jill Clayburgh, An Unmarried Woman. Yeah, you love An Unmarried Woman.
We know that movie rips. I mean, I would have been also wanting that to be the Best Picture winner.
Yeah. I haven't seen it. Maybe I'll see it before we do.
Please do. Please fucking do.
Yeah. All right. Chris, I'm so excited. Listeners, Gary's, all of you out there, we hope you are excited for this. It's going to be a banger. We are going to drop dead of exhaustion by the end of May, but we will do it all for you. So I just saw the first Omen, so it's all for you, Damien, and it's us jumping off of a building to deliver our May miniseries episodes.
Maybe my favorite Oscar nomination of this decade
is Ava Satani.
Yeah. Oh, a Satan worshipping song. It's nominated for an Oscar. Great.
The 1970s were on one. It was great.
What a time.
All right. See you in only a couple of days, Gary's. Yeah. We will be back with our episode on Something for Everyone on May 1st, and we're gonna get rocking and rolling.